Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Live from an autumnal London, England. And by autumnal, I mean cold. It's getting cold. You know how I love that. Ladies and gentlemen, on September 23, 1998, a panel of radiation safety experts gathered at a Hilton Hotel in Maryland to evaluate a new device that could detect hidden weapons and contraband. The machine known as the Secure 1000 beamed X-rays at people to see underneath their clothing. Woo-hoo! One after another, experts convened by an FDA panel raised questions about the machine because it violated a long-standing principle in radiation safety. Humans shouldn't be X-rayed unless there's a medical benefit. I think this is really a slippery slope, said Jill Lapote, who was director of New Jersey's radiation protection program. The device was already deployed in prisons. What was next? She and others asked. Courthouses? Schools? Airports? The machine's inventor, Stephen Smith, assured the panelists it was highly unlikely that the device would see widespread use in the near future. At the time, only 20 machines were in operation in the entire USA. The places I think you're not going to see these in the next 5 years is lower security facilities, particularly power plants, embassies, courthouses, and airports, Smith said. I would be extremely surprised in the next 5 to 10 years if the Secure 1000 is sold to any of these, unquote. This is from a ProPublica report on the subject. Of course, today, the United States has hundreds of those backscatter X-ray machines, as they're now known. The company was sold to Rapiscan, and some other stuff happened in the interim. Research suggests that anywhere from 6 to 100 U.S. airline passengers each year could get cancer from the machines. Still, TSA repeatedly denies that the scanners are anything but safe, glossing over the accepted scientific view that even low doses of radiation increase the risk of cancer. He, quote, even though it's a very small risk, when you expose that number of people, there's a potential for some of them to get cancer, says Kathleen Kaufman, former radiation management director in L.A. County. Robin Kane, TSA's assistant administrator for security technology, said no one would get cancer because of the amount of radiation the X-ray scanners emit is minute. Having both backscatter X-ray machines and millimeter wave machines, the TSA has bought both in about equal amounts, is important to create competition, he added, did Robin Kane, because, you know, competition is so important. You're X-raying people. Because of a regular, you know, you might think, well, it's safe. It's got to be safe because the FDA, no. Because of a regulatory catch-22, the airport X-ray scanners are not subject to the oversight required for X-ray machines used in doctor's offices, even, let alone hospitals. The reason, you'll like this, the scanners don't have a medical purpose. So the FDA cannot subject them to the rigorous evaluation it applies to medical devices. See what they did there? They turn it around on you. The FDA does have limited authority to oversee some non-medical products and can set mandatory safety regulations, but the agency let these scanners fall under voluntary standards set by a non-profit group heavily influenced by the scanner industry. As for the TSA, it skipped a public comment period required before deploying the scanners. Then, in defending them, it relied on a small body of unpublished research to insist the machines were safe and ignored contrary opinions from U.S. and European authorities that recommended precautions, especially for pregnant women, you see. It's like I say, ladies and gentlemen, pat-downs are for now, radiation is forever. One welcome little ray of simplicity in the overwhelming complexity that is the looming economic crisis. And of course, I'm speaking from London, spitting distance from Greece, and I'm not being metaphorical. One, as I say, little glimmer of simplicity is this. In the last big economic blah, back in 2008, or in the lead up to that, you had these mortgage-backed securities, the upper tranches, you're welcome, of which were regarded as risk-free. They were rated AAA. That's risk-free. That's why banks and other institutions loaded up on them. They weren't risk-free. They were anything but. Here we are. Now, with this crisis in Europe, you have the bonds of European governments, which were not only considered risk-free, they were required to be considered risk-free by European regulatory agencies. Guess what? They're not. What you might conclude from this, ladies and gentlemen, and from Fukushima, and from New Orleans, and other stuff, is we're not that good as a species at assessing risk. Now, that's not a knock. We do plenty of stuff well. We dance just as good as we want. Ask Archie Drell. You know, crickets aren't good at comedy. It's just some stuff doesn't work with, you know. So let's admit it. Let's find a species that can do this better. I don't know. Bonobos? Orangs? Dolphins? They live in the ocean. They got to be able to do risk assessment. Uh-oh, there's a whale. Get out of the way. Let's just admit this isn't our strong point and hire, you know, we hired horses to carry stuff. Let's hire the species that can do risk assessment. And then we can rest assured saying, hello, welcome to the show.
I won't let this world get next to me.
You think I'm giving up on what I had for unnecessary reasons concerning the past? I could never bet the thought of losing you. I'll always be there to see you through. My love grows. Can't be but a soul,
cause it belongs to you, you, and only you in this world.
Hey ladies, I love you so,
in this world,
my love grows, oh, oh, oh.
In this world.
Hey lady, I love you so,
in this world,
my love grows, oh, oh, oh.
Deeper, deeper,
deeper,
deeper, deeper, deeper, deeper.
From London, England, from just behind Leicester Square, where it's all walled up because of the Olympics. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Documents released this week reveal that a lawyer, Mr. Michael Silverleaf, advised the newspaper News of the World, the shuttered tabloid owned by Nice Corp. He advised them in June 2008 to settle its case against Gordon Taylor, the chief of the Professional Footballers Association, who was suing the paper for breach of privacy because he was being phone hacked. James Murdoch, the younger Murdoch, maintains he was not aware of allegations that other journalists were implicated in illegal voicemail interception before he agreed to pay Taylor a settlement worth a lot of money. And members of parliament who are going to be questioning James Murdoch again this week. Hey, James, good luck, babe. We're with you. We'll now want to know whether he saw Silverleaf's written opinion, which was sent to the newspaper's head of legal before the case against Taylor was settled. Silverleaf, in his letter, said only that there was, quote, a culture of illegal information access in the newsrooms, unquote. It calls into question the accounts given by the paper's former head of legal, Tom Kroon, and the then editor to the parliamentary committee, when both men said there was no evidence that other journalists were involved in phone hacking. How would they know? Nice people doing nice things. And more, a lawyer for the police force told one of the inquiries into the phone hacking and cop paying offing scandal that a number of police officers in Surrey, which is a county, they have counties in England, you see, a number of Surrey police officers were themselves victims of phone hacking soon after Millie Dowler, the schoolgirl, was kidnapped. It was the phone hacking of her voicemail that set off the whole scandal. And now, you see, police were being paid off and phones were being hacked. Now, it all gets smushed together because police are getting hacked. This is the first time it's been confirmed that the phones of detectives were hacked. Earlier this month, Surrey police themselves admitted they had learned Millie Dowler's phone was hacked in 2002, but had failed to act. It's believed the officers were not aware they were hacked until they were told by Scotland Yard. It's Nice Corp. They'll hack anyone. More, Rebecca Brooks, the former News of the World editor, who resigned as chief executive of News International at the height of the phone hacking scandal, like that we've reached the height, you think? Really? Received more than $2 million in cash, the use of a London office, and a chauffeur-driven limousine as part of her severance package. Records show she has resigned. We named some of them. She's now resigned from 23 boards of directors related to Nice Corp. However, the Sunday Observer has learned that along with a generous payoff and continued use of the company limousine and driver for 2 years, Brooks has been given an office for 2 years in an affluent central London area, which her spokesman asked the newspaper not to reveal for security reasons.
Hey, Rebecca, we know you're in there.
The decision to give Brooks an office will inevitably be raised when James Brooks testifies before Parliament. But it's just a nice thing to do. Don't you think? It's not just the News of the World anymore. That scandal moved to Rupert Murdoch's other London tabloid when a journalist at the Sun newspaper was arrested over allegations of police bribery, not phone hacking, police bribery, ladies and gentlemen. The man is identified as senior Sun reporter Jamie Pyatt. He covered the murder of Millie Dowler. You see how it all kind of... The Sun is the sister paper to News of the World, and Nice Corp has announced plans to introduce a Sun on Sunday, a Sunday edition of the Sun, to replace the now-shuttered News of the World, which is a Sunday-only tabloid. They have those things here. Spokesman for police investigating the hacking of the News of the World say they believe the number of people targeted for phone message eavesdropping was almost 5,800, some 2,000 more than originally thought. Meaning Nice Corp will face a larger, much larger bill for compensation of victims than it originally anticipated. The group said the cost of the News of the World closure would run to $91 million. They got that. They didn't clarify what amount had been reserved for the future legal cases. Among the stories broken by this tabloid journalist, who is arrested on charges of paying off police, could have been for, you know, legitimate story where there's strong public interest, says one media consultant. Okay, here were some of the stories that Mr. Pyatt has broken. Prince Harry wearing a Nazi uniform to a party. And more recently, the fact that a 92-year-old woman was denied alcohol because she couldn't prove she was over the legal age limit. That's public interest journalism at its very best, ladies and gentlemen. And more than that, it's nice. Nice people. All right, so one more from Nice Corp. Specialist detectives from the... from Scotland Yard have discovered the existence of a secret cell phone within News International's East London headquarters that was used in more than 1,000 incidents of illegal phone hacking. This according to the Independent, which says the phone, nicknamed The Hub, was registered to News International and located on the News of the World's news desk. Police have evidence it was used illegally to access 1,150 numbers between 2004 and 2006. Officers regard the extensive use of the phone over 2 years as significant new evidence showing that phone hacking was carried out within the paper's newsroom. Despite detailed company logs recording every call made on The Hub, it was left unexamined by two internal News International inquiries, which dismissed the notion that phone hacking was rife at the paper. The phone's existence has been discussed with some victims of hacking. Who sanctioned the use of the Hub? Who kept it hidden? And who used it illegally to access voicemails? Those are some of the questions police are looking into now. Former journalist on News of the World confirmed the existence of the Hub, saying that inside his former newspaper's office, it was controlled by a nucleus of individuals on the news desk, leaving reporters to operate, quote, like IRA cells, who were assigned stories, given precise information, but never told where this information actually came from, unquote. Of course, those were the people who were fired when the paper was closed. Spokeswoman for the police says they have no comment. News International says it's cooperating fully because they're so nice. Nice Corp. Now news of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Germany's biggest Catholic-owned publishing house has been rocked. Let's rock the publishing house. Come on, everybody. Oh, we don't do that anymore. Rocked by disclosures that it has been selling thousands of pornographic novels with titles such as Sluts Boarding School and Lawyer's Whore, with the full assent of the country's leading bishops. The revelations made in the publishing industry newsletter Buch Report concerned Weltbild, a company with an annual $2 billion turnover and 6,400 employees. It's Germany's largest bookseller after Amazon, wholly owned by the Catholic Church. Buch Report revealed that Weltbild's massive assortment of titles available to customers online includes some 2,500 erotic books with unmistakably lewd titles, including Call Me Slut, Take Me Here, Take Me Now, and Lawyer's Whore. The publisher's website also pictures the titled Lascivious Dust Jackets that feature color photographs of scantily clad women in high heels and erotic underwear. That's Catholic. Weltbild's managing director is quoted as saying the revelations have provoked a very intense and critical dialogue within the company. He says discussions were underway about possibly limiting the assortment of titles that would be available in the future. Catholic bishops responded with a statement claiming that, quote, a filtering system failure, unquote, at the publishing house, it allowed the books to stray, just stray, onto the market. Quote, we will put a stop to the distribution of possibly pornographic content in the future, said the Catholic bishops. Possible pornography. You really don't want that. When you're in the mood, you really don't want to be taking chances, do you? You want actual pornography. Possibly pornographic. Bernhard Mueller, editor of the Catholic magazine Pur, P-U-R, dismissed the cleric's reaction as grossly hypocritical. He alleged the pornography scandal at Weltbild had been going on for at least a decade with the church's full knowledge. He said that in 2008, a group of concerned Catholics sent bishops a 70-page document containing irrefutable evidence that Weltbild published books that promoted pornography, Satanism, and magic. They demanded the publisher withdraw the titles, but their protests appear to have been completely ignored. He said most of the bishops refused to respond to the charges. The sudden proclaimed astonishment, he says, is bad play acting. The Catholic Church bought the publishing company more than 30 years ago, gradually transformed itself into one of Germany's largest media companies with the help of some 182 million euros, remember those, of Catholic Church taxes levied on believers. Please give. To increase its profits, in 1998, the company merged with five other publishing companies that market pornographic titles. Not possibly pornographic, because those would be disappointments. One of them is Blue Panther Books, which was excluded from the list of participating publishers at the Frankfurt Book Fair this year because of the pornographic content of its titles. It's too dirty for the book fair, but not for the church. The Catholic Church did try to sell Weltbild in 2009, but the bishops apparently abandoned the idea after they failed to get the price they were asking. That's from the Independent of London. And also in Germany, News of the Godly, a German Catholic priest has been indicted on 267 counts of sexual contact with children. No date has been set for his trial. The 46-year-old man is accused of repeated sexual assault on at least three boys aged between 9 and 15 since 2004 in the town of Salzgitter, where he ran a parish. Catholic authorities have come under fire for taking no action in 2006 when they learned the priest slept a night with a boy in his bed. The diocese said at the time there were no allegations that any sexual contact took place. It was just a Michael Jackson kind of thing. After the boy's family complained, the priest was ordered to stop seeing the boy. He was later arrested. A psychologist is still examining the man. The Catholic Church in Germany has faced a series of allegations since the start of last year over sexual abuse or brutal corporate punishment. Which would you rather have? I think they should just give the kids a choice. Critics say the church covered up cases. Prince Benedict has been criticized for engaging a priest with child sex record to work in the Archdiocese of Munich in the 1980s when he was bishop there. You know what they call the places where bishops work, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to belabor it. It's just, you know, happy coincidence. News of the Godly. And now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
The award-winning News of the Warm this week proves that it all depends where your forest is located. This item from Science Daily, a huge migration of trees has begun across much of the West due to global warming, insect attack, diseases, and fire. Many tree species are projected to decline or die out in regions where they've been present for centuries. Others to move in and replace them. In a new report, scientists outline the impact that a changing climate will have on which tree species can survive and where. The study suggests that many species, once able to survive and thrive, are losing their competitive footholds. In some cases, once common species such as lodgepole pine will be replaced by other trees, perhaps ponderosa pine or Douglas fir. Other areas may shift completely out of forest into grass, savanna, or sagebrush desert. In Central California, researchers concluded that more than half the species now present would not be expected to persist in the climate conditions of the future. Some of these changes are already happening pretty fast and in some huge areas, says Richard Waring, professor emeritus at Oregon State University, lead author of the study. In some cases, the mechanism of change is fire or insect attack. In others, it's simply drought. Simply drought, which would be, of course, having something to do with das Climate. We can't predict exactly which tree species will die or which will take their place, but we can see this long-term, the long-term trends and probabilities. Forests of our future are going to look quite different. The survey done with remote sensing of large areas over a four-year period compared 15 coniferous, tree species found widely across much of West Canada and the United States. The research explored impacts on 34 different ecoregions. It looked at which tree species would be at highest risk of disturbance in the future that's generally expected to be 5 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit warmer by 2080. Some of the greatest shifts in tree species are expected to occur in both northern and southern extremes of the area, like British Columbia and California. Large declines are expected in those lodgepole pine and Engelmann spruce and other more temperate species such as Douglas fir and western hemlock may expand their ranges. Many wilderness areas are among those at risk of the greatest changes. Some of the mild, wetter areas of western Oregon and Washington will face less overall species change than areas of the West with a harsher climate. More than half of the evergreen species are experiencing a significant decrease in their competitiveness in six ecoregions. That's in the West. Now in the East, Science Daily reports more than half of eastern U.S. tree species examined in a massive new Duke University-led study aren't adapting to climate change as quickly or consistently as predicted. Nearly 59% of the species examined by James Clark, head of the study, and his colleagues showed signs that their geographic ranges are contracting from both the north and the south. Fewer species, only about 21%, appear to be shifting northward as originally predicted. About 16% seem to be advancing southward. Only 4% appear to be expanding in both directions. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And you've probably noticed President Obama, the Republicans claim it's early electioneering. His supporters say it's merely trying to raise support for things that he's trying to do to buttress the economy. I said buttress and try to stoke some growth, maybe create some jobs. You ever notice that when companies are hiring, they create jobs? When companies are downsizing, they shed jobs. Anyway, president is touring the country, making a lot of speeches, signing executive orders now, some stuff that he can accomplish that Congress wouldn't pass, and still plumping, I said plumping, for his Jobs Act, even though Congress rejected it in toto a couple weeks ago. And what makes it sound campaign-like is the fact that the initiative has a slogan. You may have noticed. And the slogan is, "We can't wait." We can't wait, although we waited before. Now the time is late. We can't wait anymore. We waited for Congress. We waited for Iraq. We waited for Europe. They waited right back. We waited for McConnell. We waited for Boehner. We got all twisted up in a triple half gainer.
We waited for the banks to get back in shape. Kind of like waiting for a raisin to turn back into a grape. We waited for the polls to tell us just where the center might be so we could get over there. We waited for the Afghans to take advantage of the surge. They waited for us to prolong the splurge. We waited for the leftists to get off our backs. We waited for the right to moderate their attacks. And while we waited, the economy got worse. It needed a doctor. We waited for the nurse. We waited for recovery. And we twirled a few knobs. Outside the Beltway, folks waited for jobs. We waited for China. We waited for Japan. We waited for the echo of yes, we can. Yes, we can. We waited for the markets and their wizardly spell. But they didn't weave that old magic so well. We waited for stimulus. That was too damn slow. We waited for Lefty. We waited for Godot. We waited for everyone. If we weren't in D.C., we would even have waited for the Robert E. Lee. We waited for the Senate. We waited for the House. We waited for the Fed. Like a cat waiting for a mouse. But we can't wait. Although we waited before. Election's getting close. We can't wait anymore.
Thank you.
This is Le Show, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Lake Elsinore, California. The superintendent of a school district in Lake Elsinore has apologized to the mother of a third grader forced to eat a sandwich taken from a trash can. The mother, who has to be identified only by her first name, Irene, said a supervisor at East Warren Elementary School had forced her 8-year-old daughter to eat the sandwich, sealed in a plastic bag, when it was thrown away. "I'm absolutely shocked," says the superintendent, "that anyone would ask a student to take something out of the trash can. This practice is unacceptable, inappropriate, and will not be tolerated by our school district," said the superintendent, Frank Passarella. "I'm extremely sorry that this incident took place, and please know that this will not happen in the future." The mother said the supervisor should be penalized. "I don't think this memo will make people do the right thing." She says her daughter is now afraid to eat lunch at school. I know the feeling, babe. British Business Secretary Vince Cable has apologized unreservedly after confidential documents were discovered in trash cans left outside his local office. Unshredded paperwork, including correspondence from other cabinet members and letters which contained personal details of his constituents, were found dumped in transparent recycling bags outside his Richmond and Twickenham headquarters over a nine-month period. He admitted the blunder was an unacceptable breach of privacy. "I apologize unreservedly to all my constituents for what has clearly been an unacceptable breach of their privacy," he said. "Beth, both I and my constituency team are dedicated to meeting the highest standards for the people of Twickenham. I'm very sorry that in this instance, they were not met." Millions of customers were left strapped for cash after a breakdown in the computer systems of one of Britain's largest banks. HSBC has apologized to customers who were prevented from accessing the online banking service and withdrawing money from cash machines and branches as a result of technical problems. Dateline Sioux City, Iowa, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has declared the Missouri River floods of this year over. Affected property owners argued the impact will be felt for years. "No manual told you to do this to us," said one woman at a community meeting. "You have our heartfelt condolences for your losses and the sacrifices you lived through all summer," said Jody Farhat, head of the Corps Missouri River Basin Water Management Office. "This was a very regrettable and unfortunate event," said Farhat. Oh, no, sorry, said Brigadier General John McMahon, commander of the Corps' Northwestern Division. "You have to know we are sincerely sorry for what you've been through." Did the Corps ever apologize to New Orleans? Just asking. Hey, Kelly Osbourne has become embroiled in a Twitter war of words with gay rights activists offended by her use of the word tranny during her recent interview. She since apologized for describing somebody as a tranny. I can only apologize if it offended you. I have lots of transgender friends that like to be called trannies. You should learn to fight the real fight, not with people like me who love and freely support you. I apologized. Words can be misinterpreted. Please stop this. It breaks, B-R-A-K-E-S, my heart. Speaking of spelling, they spell caddy, C-A-D-D-I-E, in Britain. I know that because there's a story about Steve Williams, the most high-profile caddy in professional golf, has apologized to Tiger Woods for comments he made at the annual Caddy Awards dinner in Shanghai. Players and candidates, caddies, look forward to this evening all year, and the sport is always joking and fun at the spirit of the event. I now realize my comments could be construed as racist. I assure you it was not my intent. I sincerely apologize to Tiger and anyone else I've offended. His comment... really shouldn't be broadcast. And the head of a foreclosure law firm whose employees mocked victims of the mortgage crisis at a Halloween party last year has apologized to an outraged advocate for the homeless who said the firm showed a disgusting lack of sensitivity. Pictures from the Stephen J. Baum law firm's last year Halloween party turned up in the New York Times. They show people dressed to look homeless. And a sign reading Baum Estates near part of the office decorated to resemble a row of foreclosed homes. The Baum firm is being investigated and has already agreed to pay $2 million and change its practices after admitting to errors. Just errors. I want to sincerely apologize for the inappropriate costumes worn by some of our employees at our Halloween party in 2010. It was in extremely poor taste, and I take full responsibility, said Stephen J. Baum in an email statement to the AP. I know people were extremely offended, and people have every right to be upset with me and my firm. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, from National Review Online. Yes, indeed. Herman Cain huddled with Henry Kissinger in New York on Thursday, discussing foreign policy with the elder statesman. That's right, Henry Kissinger is the elder statesman in this particular account. According to Mark Block, Cain's chief of staff, the former Secretary of State said that smoking thing that Mark Block did in the video that went viral this week was brilliant, said Block. Block says Kissinger was impressed by Cain's questions. He told him that he meets with any candidate who wants to get his views, but he told Mr. Cain that most come in and ask what they should say on the Sunday shows. McCain asked what he should do when he's president, a different approach for this kind of meeting. God, I wish I'd been there.
So, Mr. Cain, what can I do for you?
Henry, can I call you Henry?
At my age, I prefer Dr. Kissinger.
Oh, at your age, I'm sure you prefer any doctor. But you can call me Herman.
All right, Herman. As you know, many of the candidates in the Republican race have consulted with me.
Well,
most of them wanted to know what to say regarding certain policy matters on the Sunday morning talk shows.
Oh, believe me, Dr. Henry, I don't have that problem. I just say 999 and leave them in dust.
They used to say 999 to me when I was a child, but I didn't listen either.
Well, that's amazing, Dr. Henry.
Well, not...
No, I mean, you, even then, were formulating revolutionary tax policy.
Yeah, but you see, this was in Germany.
It makes no difference. I get some of our best ideas from Chile.
Get to think. We did a little job there when I was in government. You might want to look at some of those ideas.
No, I'm full up with Chile right now. Matter of fact, and this is just between you and me, my campaign manager, I actually turned down the job of president of Chile's.
The country?
No, the restaurant chain. I proposed radically simplifying the menu concept down to 3 appetizers, 3 entrees, and 4 desserts. We had some disagreements over that. And
anyway, Mr. Cain, what areas of the world do you want to discuss? Central Asia? And I noticed you were a bit dismissive of Uzbekistan. Actually, it's a very strategic...
Now, Dr. Henry, that was just my sense of humor. People are going to have to get used to a president who's got a sense of humor. I will, of course, be learning all I need to know about Uzbekistan.
Well, and I would also urge you to include in any conceptual framework of Central Asian policy a way forward for dealing more constructively with Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and, more problematically, Kazakhstan.
Man, those Asians got more stands than Popeye's got chickens. All right, I'll get up to speed on all of them. But what I do understand is that it's vitally important not to have a one-size-fits-all policy.
Well, a nuanced approach would emphasize the vulnerabilities and openings peculiar to each situation, of course.
Sure. So maybe one might be a medium, let's say. And the other one could be an XL.
You're being metaphorical.
Oh, it could just be my sense of humor again. It's hard to tell even for me sometimes. That's what Mark's so good at.
By the way, brilliant touch having him smoke a cigarette at the end of that campaign ad.
Well, thank you. We just had 8 seconds left and we'd run out of things to say.
Now, the Middle East, of course, is perhaps the most challenging foreign policy portfolio, aside from China.
Well, now, here's where I stand, and of course, I welcome your input.
Mm-hmm.
We need clarity. Identify our friends and our enemies, and then treat them accordingly.
That's where you stand.
Yes, sir.
Well, you see, that would be my sense of humor, saying something like that. In the real world, American policy has to be based on a persistent but subtle program of dividing Hamas from Fatah among the Palestinians while maintaining a public stance of open-handed, honest brokerhood, which paradoxically isolates the Israeli left while using discreet incentives to bring the right in center into some kind of uneasy demarche.
Right, but always with clarity. And you mentioned China.
Mm-hmm.
Should we be treating a competitor as our financier? And if so, shouldn't we be demanding better terms for that financing?
Well, I know a little something about the Chinese. It's taken me, on just my little consulting contracts, years to get a better deal from them. They will wait you out. They see themselves as having all the time in the world, which, unfortunately, in every sense of the word, I do not have. So good to meet you.
Well, Dr. Henry, thanks for your time. I know from my radio experience just how valuable a 7 or 8 minute segment can be. I hope if everything goes as Mark plans it, that we can be in touch again and that maybe you consider being on my foreign policy team.
Well, he has my contact information and my price list. Good luck to you, Mr. Kane.
Oh, the only luck I need is for those non-disclosure agreements not to be breached. Bye-bye.
Oh,
It's still the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, News of the Olympic Movement, produced by Jim Eversole Jr. Jim Eversole Jr. Mayor of London had promised that the 2012 Olympics will be good for the city and good for the tourist economy, but travel industry insiders are warning that the capital faces a slump in visitor numbers, as both tourists and business travelers shun London. After 6 years of hype, we will see 2 weeks of blip as visitors stay away from London, says Jonathan Callow, managing director of Incentive World Travel. Speaking to the British newspaper The Independent, he's followed travelers' behavior over the past five Olympiads and predicts both tourist numbers and business travelers will stay away in droves. Well, invest in droves. That would be my advice. Those drove stocks are underpriced. And hoteliers' expectations of cashing in on the event will prove inflated. Simon Dugan, director of sales for the business travel agency Ian Allen Travel, said, "Our advice to customers has been to avoid London if you possibly can, because it's going to cost a lot of money." Individual travelers as well as travel agencies are complaining that with so many hotel beds removed from the market, especially among four- and five-star hotels, prices in the remainder are being sold at highly inflated prices. Well, it would make you feel like you're in a five-star hotel if you pay five-star prices, don't you think? Dugan believes rooms could be sold at heavy discounts closer to the event. Greece in 2004, he says, was a good example of the miscalculation of the interest and uptake and what people were prepared to pay. Evidence from Sydney in 2000 and Athens in 2004 suggests that normal tourists are deterred from visiting Olympic host cities because of fears of finding a city in lockdown. For London, of course, their votes have been widely publicized concerns about the capacity of the public transport system. Hey, did that have anything to do with the problems in Greece? You think London could be the next Athens in more ways than... News of the Olympic Movement. The Olympics. It is a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. Program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. On NPR worldwide throughout Europe, use and 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. On the mighty 104 in Berlin. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Did I say the mighty 104 in Berlin? Did I say that? Up and down the East Coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like not leaving those unshredded communications from cabinet members and transparent plastic bags if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. Thanks, as ever, to Adrian Bodnam here at Global Radio in London for helping to make today's show end pretty much on time. This broadcast is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. Join the almost 48,000 wasting their time there. And if you're in New Zealand on November 18th, Sky Arts presents The Big Uneasy, its television premiere. Worth a flight down to Auckland, don't you think? The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London.